Certainly my joy to come and be with you today. I had the joy of being with the faculty yesterday afternoon. So if you notice any faculty members who are here, I told them that pretty much what I shared yesterday I would be sharing today, and that they could bum this and sit in their offices and read books. So if they are here, and I hope this doesn't go off and I'm going to be accused of false doctrine, it's sort of a work of supererogation. Again, I want to say it is good to come and be here. I appreciate these opportunities that I have had in days past, and I very much appreciate this one too. We will try to split our time kind of 50-50. I will quickly move through the various items, or some of the items that I shared yesterday with the faculty members, and then I will save time for you to elaborate or ask questions about them or any other subject that you want to ask about. The first thing that I'd like to talk about is an action that was taken at the 1995 Synodical Convention. Shortly after being elected president in Pittsburgh, the first meeting with the board of directors, they said to me, "What is your dream? What is the vision that you would have for this church? What would you like to see happening within this church?" I then shared with them, and they in turn shared with the next convention what we have come to call the fivefold vision statement. A church body that is, first of all, strongly in the Word. Secondly, a caring people. Third, boldly reaching out with the gospel. Fourth, faithful to the scriptures and the Lutheran confessions. And fifth, marked by peace and unity in Jesus Christ. Between the time that I shared that with the board of directors and the convention, as I was out in the church, I would mention that fivefold vision statement to the people of God and to my brother pastors at pastoral conferences. And again, I would hear them saying, "That's the kind of church we want to be." The only thing that is somewhat discouraging to me is that we have not really picked up on that fivefold vision statement and made as much out of it as I believe we as a church body both can and should be doing. And so I would ask you as individuals to sort of tuck that into your memories, and especially those of you who are going out on vicarage, and those of you who will be assigned out into the church as pastors very shortly, that you think forward and look for those ways in which we can say to the people of God in Missouri, that's the kind of church we want to be. Strongly in the Word. Because everything that God has told us about Himself, His love, His forgiveness, His grace, His peace, His caringness for us, we did not gather by watching the clouds float through the sky, but through His almighty Spirit-filled Word. Caring people. A people that as one looks at us, says, look at how they care for one another. Husbands to wives, wives to husbands, and the list goes on and on. Members to fellow members. Third, boldly reaching out with the gospel of Christ, and I'll talk more about that. Fourth, mark a church that is strongly identified as a confessional Lutheran church body. And four, marked by peace and unity in Jesus Christ. The second thing that I listed here is I need to offer to you words of encouragement as individuals daily, and I'm going to use the word daily to be in the Word. I would have to tell you that if I were to deprive that time of being in the Word and in prayer with God in my life, I am fully convinced that I would not be able to fulfill or serve the responsibilities of the President of the Senate as I should. But even if it wasn't a matter of being the President of the Senate, in just a G.I. Joe believer in Jesus Christ, I need that opportunity for God, day after day, in His almighty Spirit of Word, to come into Alberry's life and to speak to me through His Word, to tell me of His care, His love, His forgiveness, His grace, and then the privilege of turning to Him in prayer, talking with Him about my joys, my frustrations, my needs, my pleasures. I simply cannot encourage you enough in your personal life be daily in the Word. And take that time to allow God to lead you to His almighty spiritual. third thing that I listed there is I've given a very high priority to spending a great deal of time out in the church. And the reason I do that is because I think it's very important that the President of the Senate spends a lot of time out in the church in order that he can stay in touch with the people of God and they can stay in touch with the heart of the President. Right after this meeting, I'll be going to the airport for a 7-day trip. I'll be going to Florida, then to Texas, then to Colorado, and back in. And I pride those times. I pride those times when I can be with the people of God, and they can talk with me, and I can talk with them, and I continue to give a very, very high priority to them. I think the same thing also holds true for parish pastors. The more a parish pastor can give a high priority to being out and among his people, the more effective will his ministry be, and the more relevant will his ministry be as he serves the people of God in St. John's Happy Town. In the Word himself, in the midst of his people. And God has a fantastic way of blending together those two things in full and complete ministry. The next thing that I listed here is the number one emphasis that I am carrying presently out into the church and will be carrying out into the church in the months and years ahead. It is what we call tell the good news about Jesus. It's an emphasis that pretty much comes on the basis of the third fivefold vision statement. It is an emphasis in which we are encouraging our church body more and more, the individuals, the congregation, to place a very high priority sharing with others the good news that is theirs in Jesus Christ. It often begins with just opening our mouths. In Acts it says that Philip the Ethiopian, Philip said to the Ethiopian eunuch, he opened his mouth and he told him the good news about Jesus. It seems to me that we as a church body have properly placed a very high priority down through the years on retaining the truth of God's almighty word. And God forbid that it ever be otherwise in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. But we cannot sit on those truths of God's word. We need to look for every opportunity that we as individuals have simply to tell to others what we have come to know in Jesus Christ and that what holds true for us, God also wants to do in their lives. I have urged husbands to sit down and simply share that with their wives with their husbands, parents with their children, grandparents with their grandchildren, people who are working together with each other. And I guess I would just say to you as seminarians, take time to speak to each other about your faith in Jesus Christ. Share with one another the joy that is yours in knowing that you are a child of God and have life everlasting to look forward to and favor with in a state of forgiveness. Say it. You need to hear yourself say it. Others need to hear you say it to them also. In that particular connection, the district conventions are rapidly approaching, and one of the key things that I, as president of the Senate or my representative at those district conventions, will be carrying is an emphasis on telling good news about Jesus. We will at the beginning, the president is given like 3 time slots. In the first one, we will talk with them concerning walking together in the whole area of that which we believe, teach, confess, and practice as the church body, but especially specifically church health. In the second 30-minute time slot, we will be talking, tell the good news about Jesus. I will, in every convention I go to, and I am asking those who represent me in conventions, I will not take time before the people of God there and talk of the joy that is theirs in Jesus Christ. And then to ask what we call the district coordinators of the DCAN or the television's emphasis to do the same. And then to ask the district president, who is the leader, the elected leader of those districts, to talk with the delegates that are assembled and himself speak his faith in Jesus Christ to them, leading the convention kindly in prayer that God would more and more make of us as a church body in which they can say, not just look at how they prize the truth of God's word, but look at how they share the gospel of Jesus Christ with those who are around. The International Center, we have actually designated time at the beginning of the Board of Directors meeting, Council of Presidents meeting, Administrators Forum meeting, and other meetings where we ask a couple people simply to talk about their faith and prayer. When we first began to do that, there were those who said, oh, Barry's introducing testimonials. Well, we got past that. And now, one of the most meaningful things of those meetings is when two of our co-workers talk about their faith in Christ. I also noticed so keenly how the people at the International Center are beginning to talk to each other about their faith. On Monday of this week, when I was coming into the International Center, one of the Black American ladies who was the secretary of one of these partners came up to me and she said, I simply have, she said, first of all, do you have a moment? Now, brethren, when you get out in the ministry and someone comes up to you and says, do you have a moment? Whatever you're planning on doing, stop and listen. Tears began to well in her eyes. She said, 2 years ago, I was not as close to the Lord as I am today. But I spent a lot of time in the Word, a lot of time in prayer. My faith is now so much more meaningful. I realize, as I have never realized before, how good God is to me, how He's forgiven me, how He daily walks me. And as the tears ran down her cheek, I took her by the hand and I said, isn't it great to know that ours is that kind of God? We need, as individuals, to share with one another the good news in Jesus Christ and to do it again and again and again and again. Others may hear from our lips, and we may hear from our own lips the great forgiveness of God in Christ. The district conventions will have a very full platter of items that they will be addressing. There are 25 district conventions, amazingly enough, in June. Needless to say, I'm not going to make it to all 25. I was a little disappointed if there were those of you here from North Dakota. North Dakota always was the first one to hold its convention in January. I asked them, why do you hold your convention in January? And they said, what else is there to do in North Dakota in January? And they always kind of took a little bit of pride in this fact that they had the first convention in January. I can remember when I was there the last time, my motel room, I had to stand up and look out over the snow. They twice tried to change their convention to June. I remember the last time the vote was 62-62. Then the vote in the afternoon was 61-61. I suppose a couple of guys decided to sleep in. But be that as it may, finally they also moved to June. We have 25 district conventions in the month of June. The first district convention will be in South Dakota yet this month. The second convention will be yet this month now in the Southern Illinois district. And they will have one of the key items that they will need to address is something referred to them at the 1998 convention, a study, a dialogue based on materials from the President's Office and the CPCR on the subject of church fellowship. The Synodical Convention is also going to be extremely busy. When I take a look, and I shared this yesterday with the professors here at the seminary, when I take a look at all of the things that we have to do at the 2001 Synodical Convention, I quite frankly wonder how we're going to get it all happening. We have to tell the good news about Jesus. We have to give ample time. By ample time, I'm talking not just like 15 minutes, but I would imagine 3 or 4 45-minute time slots for the subject of church fellowship. The handbook of the Synod has been completely reworked, and that will have to be dealt with. We have task forces that will be reporting, one on the district synod relationship, one on the future what we call RSO status and what have you. We will also be considering, I think, a very significant resolution or recommendation relative to establishing the office of deacon within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And in addition to that, then there are the whole parade of overtures and reports that will be coming. So I see the 2001 convention as being a very, very busy convention, a very heavy scheduled convention. I mentioned yesterday also that the Council of Presidents Program Committee recently met, and they had some very, very interesting concerns, some very appropriate concerns. On the one hand, they discussed, and occasionally we find out in the church, a pastor who very much lords it over the congregation. In some cases, they are pastors who have left the Walter principle of church and ministry and moved over to the drama principle of church and ministry. I told them about an incident that happened when I was editor, district president. We had a deaf congregation. One of the members, the lady of the deaf congregation, came in. She wanted to talk with me about some of the problems in that deaf congregation, especially how the pastor was treating the people. She had drawn a picture. At first, she was able to speak, and I was able to read her lips, and we were able to communicate, but as her emotions grew, she could no longer speak appropriately, nor could I understand. She finally handed me a diagram that she had drawn, a picture, very well done. It was a picture of a shepherd. The shepherd had beneath him a sheep. The shepherd had his staff raised above his head, like this, and he was leading the sheep in front of him. Three of the sheep were bleeding. Others of the sheep were cowering away from the shepherd. And then she said to me, I recognize that God has given to the under-shepherd a staff with which to reach out with the hook and bring back those who are straying. Take the other end and poke those who need to move on. But God has never given a shepherd this staff to be used to lead. As I read her note to me, and she watched my face, she then took her hands and covered her eyes. And I think it is very important that we as the church body say to our brother pastors that they need to exercise all kinds of pastoral care, dealing with the people of God, and use that staff in the proper way. On the other end of the spectrum, just as deplorable, is that we find situations where congregations today are treating their pastors as hired hands. With a higher hand, fire mindset. If they do what they want them to do, they keep them open. If they don't, they can. And we're going to have to address that as a church body. And we are going to address it. For just as we cannot have pastors who misuse the flock, so also we cannot allow congregations to misuse their called servants of Christ. That will be said by myself and my representative at every district convention we find ourselves going. I think another thing, we continue to have good contact with the ELCA, WELS, ELS. With the ELCA, we have what we call the 10-10 meeting, which involves 10 from Missouri and 10 from the ELCA to discuss theological issues. Then we have the CLC, Committee on Lutheran Cooperation, that meets twice a year with them. And that's kind of a nuts and bolts kind of thing. How's your pension program? Our pension program? Do you change the tires on your car? Do you change the tires on our car? You know, this kind of stuff. Nuts and bolts kind of stuff. With the WELS and ELS, I indicated yesterday that we see an increasing number of pastors from the WELS and the ELS elected or appointed positions attending a lot of our meetings, like health care, sanctity of life. That does not mean that our church bodies are heading into fellowship in any way. There are certain basic truths, certain basic positions that still very much divide us, even though that we have so much in common, so very much in common with them, afraid the day will never come, although I thought that was regarded as the Berlin Wall, the day will never come when I first body for the Kimberly Fellowship. One issue is the issue of prayer, another is the issue of women's suffrage, another is the issue of church and ministry. Overseas church bodies, I like to talk about this one. Overseas church bodies, about every 3 months or 4 months, I send a letter to all of the presidents of the 200 plus overseas church bodies. I started doing that because I felt Missouri needed to reach out beyond herself and establish greater contact. And I'm sure I mentioned this the last time I was with you. The result of this is that we have all types of Lutheran church bodies around the world who are beginning to lean toward Missouri and come to Missouri, and they are being attracted to us because of the professional Lutheran theology that this church body stands for. Most recently, Ethiopia, the fastest growing church in Africa, has addressed a letter to my office asking that we enter into church relations discussions with you to establish a pulpit and all the fellowship with them. Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, Belarus, and the list goes on and on and on. And you know, sometimes I kind of scratch my head. I hear people within our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod sort of making fun of the Synod because we are a confessional Lutheran Church body and are committed to being that way. And the thing that I find some people making fun at is what is attracting many an overseas Lutheran Church body to us. The next thing I listed here is on Monday and Tuesday of this week, Professor Eichmann and myself, together with other representatives, held our second meeting with the Renewal in Missouri people. We have scheduled 3 2-day meetings in which to address the differences that still remain between the Grimm group and the Senate's position relative to the charismatic movement. It's somewhat of a trying meeting, somewhat of a frustrating meeting. We will continue to meet, and the President of the Synod will bring to the Church in 2001 a recommendation concerning renewal in Missouri. You may want to visit on this entire subject of catechesis. You may want to also plug into the entire subject of the A statement that the President of the Synod placed into USA Today and 15 other newspapers. I want to simply list those so that you feel free to bring them up if you would like to. And the last thing, the question that is always asked of me, a couple of the seminarians over here ask that, how's your health? Thanks be to God, it is very good. There is not a day that I do not turn to God. I did it this morning, I'll do it again tonight, and I will say thank you, God, for the restoration of my health. I am now in the fifth year after the treatments that I receive for a leukemia. I go in every 3 months, have my blood checked, and all that kind of stuff, and physical, and the doctor says everything looks great. They went into my annual physical, the first part in the middle of January, at my primary caregiver, and he checked me all through, and told me, like with PSA, you young guys don't know anything about PSA, but that has to do with prostate cancer and what have you. 1.5. Cholesterol below normal. He went down the line and he wrote me a letter and he said, everything just looks great. I'm so pleased with your physical and your reports. But you know, you can't go to the primary caregivers without them wanting to say at least one thing that you have to do differently. And he said, I noticed by looking back to last January and this January that you are 8 pounds heavier. Maybe you could take that. Me. Well, those are the items I wanted. We got 15 minutes now, and then I know your classes begin. I'd like to give you the opportunity then to plug into some questions. Yes, all right?
I want to thank you, Dr. Berry, for your truly courageous stand in regard to the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. The accusation was made that this was somehow just your own personal opinion. I recognize that you've been elected by our synod to speak where we have spoken already. Would you please go through how your ad has as its background any synodical resolutions or opinions of our faculties, and what boards or entities did you take this to before you placed the act?
Very good question. I'll try to do it briefly. First of all, I need to tell you that as we were moving into June, July, August especially, September, there was a real hype out across the entire world with regard to Lutheran Catholics and the JDDJ. And it was the impression was being left that everyone was signing on to the dotted line. On October the 18th, I issued a statement that I think is still on the web President's office, and it was a pretty strongly worded statement, betrayal of the gospel. And it dealt with the JDDJ to simply say, this is not, we are not saying the same thing with regard to the doctrine of justification. As a result of the thing that was placed onto the web, both in our United States and throughout the entire world, I started receiving quite a bit of correspondence, of which 85% of it was very favorable. Two dominant thoughts came out. One is you have to say it more than on the web. You have to send a letter to every one of our congregations and say, this is the situation. And the second is that you need to say it to the world, because all of these news releases about Lutherans and Catholics are getting together. They are not appearing just in religious publications. They are appearing in secular publications, and you need to say something to the world at large. I pulled that back and forth and back and forth. I consulted with several key leaders in the Senate about this. Finally, I made the decision that I would place it. I would send to all of our congregations a letter on the subject, which I did. And secondly, that I would place, if I could find the funding, into USA Today and 15 major newspapers, a statement in which I would simply say, we are not saying the same thing, and there are a bundle of Lutherans around the world who feel the same way. Here in the United States, there are 3.25 million Lutherans who didn't sign on. Germany, 247 German theologians. Of the list of 250-some churches around the world, 45% did not sign on. And so I prepared the statement. The statement was one that I worked on again and again and again and again, always shortening, always shortening, always shortening, because they tell you that if you say too much, they just leap on to the next page. And finally, I made the decision as the chief ecumenical officer of this church body, which the president has the right to do, to proceed in doing this, place it into the 15 newspapers of USA Today. Statement was one that Perry prepared. The decision was Perry's decision. So I say to people, you know, if you want to shoot someone, don't start looking for others with whom I can solve it. I'm the target. Very interesting that in the first round, 83% of our pastors responded saying, thank you for doing this. 73%, right in that bracket, of the lay people said the same thing. Then the word got out that we were counting noses, you know. People started calling in and saying, I'm against it. There are 41 other people in my congregation. Would you add 42 and this kind of thing? And from there, the statistics kind of askew. But it seemed to me, I might say that the president of the Seventh-day Adventist Church wrote me a letter saying, thank you. President of the Presbyterian Church in America, for the letter saying thank you. The statement is exactly what our church body has said to our two faculties, to the CTCR, and I think most importantly, Convention Resolution 310A, an entire column which says JDDJ is not. And so that basically is. Now I recognize that some people will not agree with the decision, and I will respect their right to disagree with the decision, but I hope they will respect the right of the President of the Senate in this particular situation before God to make a decision that he felt needed to be made. All right? Hello? long answer, but I thought you maybe needed the whole thing. All right?
Trustee Barry, in light of the dwindling financial or direct financial influence that the Synod has with our Concordia University system, Powhatan University, in light of the study that came out that suggested that our people don't necessarily perceive there to be a large difference between our colleges and universities in the system versus secular colleges, what can we in the church do to continue to have a church, continue to have a university system that is truly professional and meets those five points that you spoke of earlier?
This is a genuine concern that one finds out in the church, that our colleges are more and more losing sight of the fact that one of the key things for which we have our colleges is to prepare people or train people for preparation and service and full-time work in the church. It is not as much a priority as it used to be. Now, I need immediately to qualify. I think of two institutions that are really going forward great guns. One of them is Seward, which continues to place a very high priority on it. Another one is now Mequon, which places a very high priority on it. Visiting with President George of the Bronxville, he said, I really want this institution to become an LCMS institution and place a high priority on training people. That doesn't mean that we don't have the other courses, but we need to place a much higher priority. How are we addressing that? We're addressing it to the president's representative on the board for higher education, and I will have a privilege of speaking with all of the professors of our Concordia University system. I think it is in May, in a joint meeting, but also I am now starting to visit the campuses and sit down with the faculties, and talk with the faculties and the leadership of those institutions about this concern. All right, over here.
Great you look. In your presentation, you said, you talked about the Walton principle and the Grandall principle. And anybody who's spent time, at least especially around the edges of our Synod, has seen how diverse views on church ministry have become. The Walther's Church and Ministry is a doctrinal statement. When it was accepted, as a closed issue. So I guess my question is twofold. Do you think that Walther's Church and Ministry is still a doctrinal statement on a closed question? And are those people who teach theology contrary to Walther's position, teaching false doctrine? And the second part of the question is, do the revisions, like second, third editions, reflect the same doctrine?
Run the second one by me again.
There are two or three editions of Church and Ministry that came out in the next 10 years after the first edition, and whether or not those accurately reflect the same doctrine as the first edition.
All right, let me answer the first one. The Synod in Convention adopted the Walterian position on Church and Ministry as the official position of this church body, and the church body has not rescinded or walked away from that since that time. Now, if you're asking, can it be restudied again? It can always be restudied again. If the Senate wants to sit down and take a look at that one more time, then we'll do it just as we're doing it in the conventions with regard to church fellowship. We'll sit down and take a look at it. But it would be incumbent upon the professors, if you're asking about the professors, if they have misgivings concerning church and ministry, not to be teaching a different position than that which the Senate teaches in their classes, but rather among their peers, to continue to discuss this among their peers, their faculty members, and what have you. But that is the official position of the Synod, and I believe it is also the correct position of the Synod. Now, that doesn't mean we won't take a look at it and study it again. I always kind of got a charge out of J.A. O'Price, the one who was president of the Synod. He made the statement, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will be discussing the matter of church and ministry when the Lord comes in glory. I think it's perhaps true. All right.
Very, thank you for speaking here today. The question, I was hoping that perhaps you could share some clarification. I'm hearing a great deal about the conversation about Jesus first. I've only seen a few press releases. I was wondering if one just said, been hearing about Jesus First organization. I was wondering if you could shed some light on what exactly that is and what Synod either thinks about that, do you think that's good or perhaps not so positive about this organization?
Yes. I think almost again and again in the history of our church body, you find, I guess I will call them concerned people grouping together in sort of political movements. And I would see that the Jesus First movement, I know a lot of people have been offended by the fact that they even use the title Jesus First, but I think they have a certain agenda that they wish to achieve, and they are pursuing that particular agenda. I have not really commented on it beyond that. I think it's going to, again, as long as Missouri exists, we're going to see that happening again and again. The name will change every 3 years, but it'll be there. But I have not commented beyond that. I see whenever the man who introduced you stands up, that means you're coming to the end. I guess I want to do just one more thing, and that is to express to each of you my personal thanks for your feeling the tug of the Lord to serve the congregations of the people of the Lutheran Church in Missouri. It is a great calling to be a pastor. I still daily in my prayers ask God to give me the wisdom to lead our church body in the way He would have us to go, to listen to the next words, and to do it in a pastoral way. And I believe that the greatest, if you want to see the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at the very best, and go into the congregations in the service of Christ, and serving the people of Christ. God bless.
Before you leave today, Dr. Berry, I want you to hear an announcement from our Student Association President, David Coomer, about a very important day that is coming up a little over a week from now, something that we here at the seminary have great hopes for, as we are about our ecumenical responsibility and opportunity to proclaim and to share with others in the Christian community our faith. David?
Dr. Berry, we spoke before your presentation this morning, just briefly, but on February 12th, Dean Rockman's office and Student Association office has invited the other seminaries in the St. Louis area, Eden Seminary, Henry Clinton, Thomas Aquinas Institute, and Covenant, all to come and discuss the topic, speaking the gospel in the postmodern years. And this is just a reminder to the student body that all of us are invited. But in light of what you said in terms of being in the congregations and being from the West Coast to the East Coast, when we get out there, we're going to have to interact with those. So I would just like for you to share a few words of encouraging people to come in, and as the main representative of our church body, to deal with those issues all the time.
I look at Dean Rockman. I think, as I said to you, I think that's excellent that you're doing this, and I just say, great. All right? That sounds like Tony the Tiger.
Join me again in thanking President Berry for taking the time out of his day to be with us, sharing with us the Lord's word and encouragement for our study and our ministry together. And also join me in praying the Lord's continued blessing upon your ministry and your travels.